Yes, any question?
Yes, check the kangaroo, is it a kosher animal?
Kangaroo?
Yes.
Okay, so does it chew the cud?
Well, that is actually the question. It doesn't have hooves, that's for sure. So
that's the two.
Not kosher.
Doesn't?
No, it doesn't. It's a small like a rabbit.
What?
Rabbit doesn't
have hooves. Rabbit chews the cud.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah, I think so. What do they mean by chew the cud? Chew the grass.
Yeah, and then, like...
Why, do they eat... Is common meat in Australia?
It's not common, but it's becoming more common. It's becoming more popular to eat.
Okay.
Yeah. But we don't. We don't eat.
Not the Jews.
Yeah.
Pardon? Which kind of
rule? Oh, in Australia. Yeah. They do, yeah. Yeah.
So, we're dealing with... To continue the subject of yesterday, the way in which a person can change his character. So those who are following the Hebrew were on Daf Lamed Hey, in the second paragraph. We know we all do what comes naturally. And it's not simple for us, even if we've got certain ideals of coming nearer to Hashem and becoming more saintly in our behavior, but it's not a simple task. And even though sometimes on the outside we think we're better, but on the inside it's more difficult to create levels of higher self-discipline, removal of anger, removal of selfishness. So, which is the way we can do it? He said the way to do it is to try to influence one's subconscious desires. And which is the way to do it? There are a number of ways, but one of the strong ways is the power of the imagination. Because if a person puts a certain picture in his mind, then it creates a strong influence. So therefore, we say the great masters of Musa, which we described yesterday, Musa is really to train oneself to self-improvement. And if we think the Torah is a question of an external way of life, and introducing a religious routine into our lives, I think we have to emphasize what the sages say: Lo nitnu ha-mitzvot ela le-tzarek ben ha-lebriot. All the mitzvot were only given to purify the human character. That's also because of this concept that you can only really create changes through something of a more concrete form, which has a great impact upon us inside, is why we have some such a thing as tefillin. Yes, if someone we ask the question of the tefillin. So we know the idea of the tefillin, as it says in the introductory prayer, is to dedicate our heart and our head and our actions service of God. Well, the person can say to me every day, I dedicate my heart, my head, my hand, my action to my God. And to do, indeed, the person will say that to himself every day, it might have an effect. But if you want it really to influence your heart, head, and hand, then if you have a physical symbol, that is filling, it creates better change in subconsciously. In recent times, when many experiments are conducted on the rain waves, the waves that come out from a person's head and from his body, which we register on screens, is even demonstrated by a special test that a person wears the tefillin, then his spiritual and emotional part of his self and his intelligence become more activated. So, I've even shown you previous shiurim photographic representations of people. So, the halo goes out on ultraviolet screens when they're not wearing tefillin, when they are wearing tefillin. And this is in accordance with what it says. It says that already in Chumash. It says, if you wear tefillin, it will make it easier for you to learn the teachings of Hashem. And this is a well-known phenomenon. So, here, Rav Dessler, he says, when we're now in Elul, we know that when we come to Rosh Hashanah, we fill our imagination with the Day of Judgment. We know the Mazal of Tishri, the scales, we say everything is in the scales. If we add more merits to our behavior, to our lives, the judgment will be for the good. If we go the other direction, be for the bad. All actions written in the book of life are the opposite. And wish one another, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, you should be written in the book of the saints. Of course, we know there's no book up in heaven. But the idea is, connect what it says in the ethics of the fathers, that all your actions and even your speech and your thoughts all recorded in a book. And this is the concept Kotveinu b'Sefer HaChaim, we say prayers, writers in the book of life. It's all to create images that will make us feel responsible. We are responsible, in fact, because not just for ourselves, we're responsible for families, we're responsible for our community, and as Jews we should know we're responsible for the world. I think that's the major teaching of the Amim Noraim. And many people go through lives, they don't feel responsible, even people in positions of responsibility, but sometimes they just make decisions according to their whims and fancies, instead of making a cheshbon hanefesh. So, the Bali Musa worked on this constantly. And especially therefore when it came to this time of the year, preparing for Rosh Hashanah after Yom Kippur, one goes through this cycle of making an annual balance sheet for the business. Also, we know it. Become customary. Probably comes even from our traditions. That people in business, once a year, they have to make sure that they've got a good balance with regard to income tax, with regard to the business they have. Got a budget. Got a budget for the future. And you've got to study the accounts of the past. And we always hope, both in the banks and for all other situations, we'll always have a little bit of a balance for the good rather than overdraft. We don't want to be in the red. So it's the moral accounting which we're preparing ourselves. So there's an example given, a very graphic one, from an episode related to the Gemara, the Brachos. Page 18b, which I'm going to describe to you and explain. There was a pious man who, it was a time of famine, and he gave a generous donation to a poor man on Erev Rosh Hashanah in the sea of famine. And when he came home, he didn't have much money for Yontif. You know, what happened to the money they had? Well, the poor man who had nothing, so gave it to him. And they say this man was Yehuda by God, was very poor. And it seems he gave away the last money he had. He saw someone who had nothing at all. Came home, I suppose they had just enough to eat, but didn't have a proper nice things for Yontif. So his wife, she provoked him. So what did he do? It was a short night. His wife provoked him, had claims against him, and he felt angry. So of course he was worried about feeling angry, and the night was Rosh Hashanah. So instead of his, didn't want to go home, I suppose at home they would have arguments and actually get more angry. So he went and spent the night in the cemetery.
Now I hope to.
In order to remove his anger, he said, "What I should, I don't want to be angry, I've got to consider life is short." And while he was there, he heard the spirits of two deceased children having a conversation, two sisters. This is explained, I'm sure he explains, the nefesh, the lowest part of the soul, remains with the body after death. The neshama, the elevated part, separates from the body to ascend to higher realms. Here the Gemara speaks of Ruach, the spirit. Is that part of the soul that is intermediate between the nefesh and the neshama, that sometimes remains with the dead body, and sometimes roams free and ascends to the higher realms where the neshama is found. So, one said to the other, "My friend, let us roam the world and let's hear what's going on behind the curtain." The curtain, the partitions of the Divine Presence. What misfortunes are going to come to the world during this year? We know Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Hashanah, it's the head of the year. Not just Rishis Hashanah, not just it's the head. The head potentially contains all the nerves, it's the nerve center of the whole body. Similarly, also, whatever's going to happen that year is there potentially already on Rosh Hashanah. So let's find out what punishment is coming. What's going to happen? So the other friend said, "I can't come with you. I can't come with you because I'm tied in a matching of reeds." because her family was too poor to afford proper linen shrouds. And she was ashamed to be seen in poor attire. Although the other spirit wasn't proposing their body leave the grave, the disembodied spirits appeared dressed in the same clothing as the body itself. Alternatively, the expiation is, as long as the body is not decomposed and the spirit cannot fully disengage from it, for this reason the dead are buried in little shrouds, which decompose quickly and don't retard the body's decomposition. So you go, and whatever you hear, come and tell me. So she went and Rome returned, and she said, "My friend, what have you heard from behind the curtain?" Said to her, "I heard that crops of anyone who plants this winter, at the time of the first rain, it will be destroyed by the hail." So this is what the pious man heard on the night of Rosh Hashanah. So what happened? Of course, the Israel, because he was also very poor, so he planted at the time of the second rain, when other people's crops had become destroyed, but his survived. So he was able to remove himself a little bit from his poverty. So then the story continues. I'm not going to go to the other side of the story. It's very interesting to try to understand what lies behind it. I'm just going to deal with a comment of the Yisroel Salant on this story. He said, how do we understand that a chosid goes and spends the night, Rosh Hashanah, in a cemetery? The sage there was a tzaddik. So he says, because one of the ways to remove anger is one thinks to oneself, how long is life? Is it really worthwhile getting angry? The anger, it just sometimes causes disputes. The person comes out with lashon hara, speak nicely to others, insult others, and also eats himself up. If he doesn't say anything, he does harm to himself. You've got to learn to remove anger. Of course, a kas mi libecha. To control anger is also good. But just to control it, keep it bottled up, is not good either. Therefore, to take away anger from your heart. How do you do it? By having this image. You say, it's not worthwhile. Let me rather spend time in doing safety acts, an act of kindness, and trying to come nearer to Hashem. The anger itself is a blockage to Hashem. As the sages say, you know, we say in Kriyat Shema tonight, some of us, "Rikzu v'al techetau, im revavavchem amishkavchem v'dom nusela." Rikzu, you want to remove yourself from sin, then create a broges. Know what the Yiddish expression broges means? Means get angry. There's only one aspect of anger which you should use. Let your yetzer hatov, you get angry with your yetzer hara. Lolam yargiz adam, yitzro hatov al yitzro hara. A person can use anger. He should say to himself, my evil inclination, which wants just great things for myself, pleasure for myself, power for myself, and everyone to praise me, And that saved me over my life. And as a result of that offering, I can even say nasty things to other people. Or just indulge my appetites, which are not good for my health. So what should a person do? Create a certain amount of anger against the evil inside yourself. But not simple. So it says, this is how the sage described this verse. Ritzu v'altech etzal. What happens if you're not successful? First of all, imru bilvavchem. First of all, learn Torah. Instead of spending time brooding and indulging yourself, spend your time to grow greater in knowledge and understanding of the wisdom of life by learning Torah. But you see, the Yetzirah still comes in, even though you're learning Torah, but you haven't really become a better person. Well enough. Yetzirah is still ruling your life. And it says, Al Mishkavchem. So if learning Torah is enough, you should read the Shema. Now reading the Shema here, Al Mishkavchem, because of Shokhov Kamecha, when you're down, you should read the Shema, and when you're up, you should read the Shema. When you're up and you're doing very well, then it can go to your head. So then you've also got to read the Shema to recognize Kabbalat Olma Vuchamayim, that Hashem is ruling the world, I'm going to make sure it rules my life. And when you're down also, and you feel I've been learning Torah and I'm still a better person, then maybe your learning Torah has become intellectual pleasure, you're making progress, but you're forgetting about Hashem. Last week someone said to me, speaking about yeshivot, he said, a rather sharp expression, but that was his impression, the person who's been involved with yeshivot, headed with yeshiva himself. He said, his question is, where is God in the yeshivot? In other words, there are some yeshivot, they learn, yeah, they have heated discussions about the question and the answer in the Gemara and in the Tosfos and the Achronim, and some of them have already heated arguments, but you know, in Torah, and they get prizes, who gets the best answers in the examinations. Where is God? I said that's why we have in all the yeshivot, we have an emphasis on tefillah and Musa. That's why we have a mashgiach. Mashgiach should really be one. The yeshivas also try to do their part, but still, we've always got to ask ourselves the question. Just as the prophet said in the Beit HaMikdash. It was Beit HaMikdash, and the prophet said, okay, very nice, you have the service, you have the Kohanim, but what is the castigation of the prophets, which applies to us as well today? They say that because these people, the people of Israel, Yan Nigash Amazel, the people with Shatat Kedun, they honor me with their mouth and their lips, but their heart is far away from me. Yeah, you say it, you see. Some people say the prayers like an express train, and they'll be honest with themselves. Not simple. You have kavanah. You have to work on it. And I sometimes say, you know, even if the filler, you can have a few words of saying the true kavanah. That's the essence of tefillah. Hashem wants the heart. So that's what the prophet says. Fatehi yiratam oti mitzvat anashim melumada. This is the words of Yeshaya. And the God-fearers, the fear of me, was taught by the commandment of men. You live in a society where everybody prays, you also pray. I must say that this is one of the hazards of the FFPs. It's not so much one of the hazards of the true BTs. If you know what those phrases mean. The Prun from birth and the Bali Tshuva. The Bali Tshuva, at least those who are not just Bali Tshuva from the outside, it teaches a great deal. Many of them, they come from far away and they are self-motivated. More so than a person who's made mitzvah into a routine. So we have to work hard, especially at this time of the year, to change ourselves. So therefore we say, Rizvah Tachtav, the same principle, as mentioned by Yeshaya, but that even of saying the Kriya Shema is special. You know, when you say the Shema, you cover your eyes. Why should we cover our eyes? Because we're supposed to, that even the essence of it is to accept the creative type of unity between the higher part of our mind with God Himself. There's even an opinion that we know the ineffable name of God, which you never pronounce except the high priest in the Yom Kippur service, that when you say Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, we always use, we call Hashem the name, because Hashem is above everything that we know through sense perception. And even the above, everything we know through ordinary human thought, he's the source of human thought. He's the source of everything around us. He's the one that constantly is the source of all energies, including our life energy and our spiritual energies. But to get that into one's mind means an exclusion sometimes of the whole world that we can see. In order to be able to get a perception of the world that we can't see. That's Yikro Kriya Shema. And then it said, Ritzuvah to Imu Bevacha Amishkavchem is Beshokbacha, Vedomu Selah. And then eternal silence. What's eternal silence mean? The sages say, if that doesn't work, then think of death. Because death is eternal silence, as far as we know. As far as we experience. You say it isn't really so. It's a new life. But as far as the material world is concerned, it's silence. The Domu Sela. So they all ask the question, if you've got an enemy, like the Yetzirah, an enemy, you take Zeir and Chamal Evecha, because next week's Pasha is also interpreted to refer to the real enemy of the human being, which is the power of evil. So, as we know, let's say you've got a very strong enemy, you're not going to start attacking that enemy with bows and arrows, or even with ordinary guns, when you've got non-conventional weapons. If you really want to get rid of them, they'll use the strongest weapons right away. So why here, when you've got three weapons to remove the power of evil? So why do the sages say, first try learning Torah, then Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, and only then think of death? So the answer is, because just to think of death is the worst thing to do. Generally, it can lead a person to depression. Or it can lead a person to say, right, I don't know when I'm going to die, so meanwhile, carpe diem, let me get on, enjoy life to the maximum. Let me enter into all physical enjoyment straight away, for nobody knows how long he's going to live. And we say no, because of the other way around. That's why first do the things that bring life. then it doesn't work. But you've been through learning Torah and Kabbalah Olam Shamayim, but just sometimes you've got to knock out the power of evil. That is chassidut. He went and stayed overnight, Rosh Hashanah, in the cemetery. Now, of course, this is an extreme situation. And I think you'll ask any rabbi if you've got problems that you feel you need to try to get rid of the power of your own evil inclinations. No one should go to the cemetery in Shammai. It's not. This Chazed, he had to do it in exceptional circumstances. In fact, there are some of the commentators say the whole of this episode was not an actual situation. He went to the Beit HaKavarot, but he thought to himself this situation. Not go to all the details of hearing the spirits and so on. It may have been an imaginary procedure, which perhaps didn't even take place literally, although there's a difference between the commentators. In other words, a person should use the power of imagination to say to himself, life is short, and therefore let's use it to the maximum. You've got any questions, please? Yes.
A comment.
Yes.
Maybe related. About the cemetery incident. So Moses Montefiore, later in life, always went to bed in a coffin. He slept in a coffin. So, is that the same thing? In other words, life is short, you better watch how you behave or whatever.
Is that recorded? Hmm? You've seen that recorded?
Yes.
Yes?
I've heard it many times with you.
Also, Dracula.
Huh?
Also, Dracula.
Who?
You know, Dracula.
Dracula. What's that?
It doesn't matter. I've got a question.
Anyway, it's Romania, right? Then you must say, mention Moses Montefiore. I know that he was a highly respected nobleman in the British House of Lords at a very high level. He was a very rich person and enormously charitable. And very concerned to help all Jews all over the world. When the Damascus blood libel, he was the main person who saved the Jews. And you know, here in Yerushalayim, those of you who toured Yerushalayim, there are many places named after him. And put up a windmill to get Jews to produce more flour and other things. He built up various areas, the Zichron Moshe, Yemin Moshe, Maskeret Moshe, all named after Moshe Montefiore. He did a great deal to establish the early renewal of life for Jews here in the land of Israel. But, he certainly was a saintly man, but the first time I've heard kept in the coffin.
I wanted to ask you your thoughts. There was once a show I saw called The Bucket List.
The what?
The Bucket List. Bucket List. Kick the bucket means the person's going to die. So a bucket, I think it comes from that kick the bucket.
Yeah.
So a bucket list means you've got some, Mr. X has got a terminal disease, but he's still feeling healthy, but his doctor says you've got 3 months to live. He's got lots of money, so he takes a friend and they enjoy life to the maximum. They have parachutes, they go to all places in the world, mountains, best hotels. They've got 3 months to live, they've got lots of money. So, we're talking about in life, pretend this is the last day of your life, and therefore in the religious world, you mustn't go to the most expensive hotels. You must pray, you must learn Torah. I think that's a big difference between the secular and the religious, and it's quite difficult to understand, to cross from one to the other.
Yes, I mean, the Gemara brings Rabbi Elazar ben Charsum said in the Shia to his disciples, Shuv yom echad lifnei mitatecha. You call it teshuvah one day before you die. So they said, well, we've got plenty of time. We're young students. They said, who knows when they're going to die? He said, one day before you die. So you don't know which is one day. He said, well, that's what I'm going to teach you. Nobody knows, and therefore make sure that you use each day to fulfill as many mitzvot as possible, do as much kindness as possible. The opposite of, you call that bucket kickers?
Bucket list. They write a list, like a shopping list. We must go to Kathmandu, we must go to Mount Everest. Wherever. A list of, they've got 3 months to live, so they've got a list.
You don't necessarily have to have a bucket list.
We could go to list of all the mitzvot that have life
and
need to
fulfill.
Yes, you have to fill that bucket with as many good deeds as possible.
Yeah.
Now, let's rather go away from this this method, which is very extreme, and is the essence of Torah, as is shown also by the Beit HaMikdash and the Kohen in Beit HaMikdash, any mention of death and anything to do with it is Tameh. It's Tumah. Yeah? I mean, how they cause it. Let's say a Kohen is forbidden for him to go into Beit HaMikdash, they go until today. Kohen is not going to a graveyard, you know, except close his family in certain situations, otherwise, shouldn't go, shouldn't be near. Because we believe in the teaching of life. That's why some say it's non brita kvarot, this is not the right path. But the idea is sometimes a person has to take the extreme, let's say in this instance he felt anger was taking hold of him, I've got to get rid of it, I can't allow it. So he took this extreme path. But generally speaking, we say the opposite. We've got to learn to go the path of the Torah, which is to serve Hashem b'simcha, with joy, and not with anything that might make you depressed. And he says, he brings here from the concept of a korban, next line, so you know what's the idea of a korban. A korban, most of the korbanot, you've got to eat part of the cloth offering you bring, to bring you near to Hashem. And the idea of it is, you take the animal soul, to korbanot, it's been made also from meal offerings. But there's some korbanot, many of them, we say in the morning, this is animals. The idea of that is, we've got an animal nature, the animal nature wants to enjoy life and to eat, and enjoy eating. It says you should enjoy it, but let's say there's a din, we just had the din of Maaseh Sheni also, that you have to separate the tithe, and that tithe had to be eaten in purity in Yerushalayim, and that's the way you learn L'man yilmad yirut Hashem kol ha'yamim. That's how you learn to fear Hashem all your life, by enjoying life, but recognizing the eating and drinking, and also your marital life, it's all a way of avodat Hashem, to serve Hashem with a body on the highest level. So when it says, "V'ahavtet Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha," you should love Hashem with your total feelings, with your double heart. So the sages say, what's the double heart? It's the Yetzirah and the Yetzirah. Love Hashem with the Yetzirah. Use your materialistic desires, don't remove them, use them in the service of Hashem. in order to enjoy life and to sublimate them. Because the Korban used the word Makavit Ratzon HaShafel or Miyachna Makavit Ratzon HaElyon. It takes the lower desires of human beings and unifies them and brings them into connection with the higher desires. And therefore it also brings the higher desire to join with the lower desire. So we say the higher desire, that is a spiritual light which comes to the heart via the intelligence. And it says, V'yadata yom v'shevot elavech, what you know today through the power of knowledge and intelligence, you've got to bring it to your heart. Let the heart feel the elevation created by the development of the high intelligence and the high consciousness of man. And what the Tzon HaShafel, the lower desire? That's the natural instinctive desire which seeks pleasure. So, go and use that pleasure and join it together with the higher desire. To tie up the nefesh of man with the nefesh of the korban, of the animal. And therefore, it's as though a person raised up the animal self inside him to be sublimated, to become intertwined with the higher spiritual self. So this is the concept of sublimation, which is the basic to the mitzvot of the Torah. To use the material world, and that's why in fact you can say Jews, they have underneath a desire to experience all aspects of life. but the purpose of this is to harmonize all the different aspects of life in the service of Hashem. That applies to individual, applies to the nation. And whereas in some religions the most holy person doesn't marry at all, with us, the most holy person, on Yom Kippur, when he does the most holy service in the most holy place, he's not allowed to do it, he's not married. There, when they even arrange, one never knows what's going to happen, just in case his wife dies on Yom Kippur. So, when he arranged it before Yom Kippur, it's going to happen now, even though he doesn't have that direct care. Physical contact with her. He's not allowed on Yom Kippur. But nevertheless, the symbol is that there's no such thing as single blessedness in the Torah. Marriage is an important aspect of life. The sages say, a person not married is half a human being. And other religions, they say, it's got to keep away from carnal pleasures. But for us, the Kodesh Kodashim, the most holy place, is what Rav Akiva said to Shir HaShirim. That's also part of the teaching. The Song of Songs, which is the most, you can say, least in the Tanakh, the most extreme expression of making use of the enormous love between man and woman, and using that as a moshal to reach the most highest holiness. So next year, by the way, today is going to be given. My son is still with us, Abraham. So he's going to give the shiur based on the Chumash together with any questions.
What do you mean Judaism doesn't believe in single blessings?
Single blessings.
What is that? What's a double blessing?
Double blessing is marriage.
Oh, okay.
The chayim, you see. Chayim is a double expression.